Music makes people come together at festivals, gigs and clubs. We share epic moments. Best friends for the entire set or the rest of our lives. Heineken, live your music. To get your hands on tickets to all the best gigs and festivals, visit heinekenmusic.ie. Enjoy Heineken responsibly. Visit drinkaware.ie.
Hello, I'm Roisin Murphy, and I'm back again with some more Sync Sessions brought to you by Heineken Live Your Music. This is the second programme, and if you missed the first one, I had Tom Finlay in the studio from Groove Armada, and we had a lovely chat. So, welcome, little dragon. No, that sounds really fake. Welcome. You know yourself, Darina. Welcome, little dragon. Yukimi, Eric, and Håkon. How are you?
Hi. Thanks
for having us. Nice to be here.
We're delighted to have you. I'm going to start with asking you if you have, in fact, described yourselves as weirdos, and if so, why?
Did we?
It says here you described yourselves as weirdos. I know this is the kind of question that I get as well.
Yeah. Probably we are.
I think we are weirdos. I always feel most of the times doing a show that we are too weird to achieve what other bands can achieve on a live show, because it feels like some people in the crowd maybe get lost. What are they doing? Why are they so strange? But it's, so I think that's weird.
That's just how we feel.
Yeah. But how do you think that affects your legacy long term? Good or bad?
Probably good.
Yeah.
I think.
We have a good kind of core fan base.
Yes.
We kind of appreciate a little quirky.
I think some fans, if you keep going, they come and they go. You lose people, you gain people.
Yeah.
I think weirdo is a bit of a negative term, really, for it, no?
I kind of like it, but I think that I don't know. I mean, I identify myself as a weirdo, but as so many different things, you know, as layers of
being
a person.
Since what age did you feel you might have been a weirdo?
Quite early, I think. Yeah, I was a bit of a goth. Yeah, I very early on realized that I could experiment with makeup and put like purple lipstick around my eyes, smudged it around my eyes, and painted like eyelashes with my eyeliner and stuff. Everyone thought I was on drugs. But yeah, so I guess it was important for me at that age, like 14, to be a weirdo and stick out a lot in school.
And what does that do? Do you think that maybe attracts good people to you? People who have to kind of get past certain prejudices first, and then, or that they're open-minded people might come more handily to you? I always felt like I made a decision around the same age to move out of the mainstream. You know, obviously I wasn't thinking I'm moving out of the mainstream, but I made a conscious decision to move away from like the things that sort of the girls around me in school were so fascinated with, and into music and into, as you said, kind of dressing up, being strange, being weird. And I thought it was a great thing for me. It was like a pivotal thing in terms of the people that it brought around me. When did you guys meet? How old were you when you met?
Well, I think me and Eric met pretty like...
You were 14, I think. I was 16.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's when we did a... I was a stand-in drummer for another drummer.
Yeah.
in a band I was singing in at the time.
We were playing in the school auditorium, is that what it's called?
Yeah, we were...
really looked like a beautiful panda, sort of, and had this amazing dark voice. But just going back to what you're saying, I think I feel also when I look back at my teenage years, I was trying to push many people away from me.
Yes.
Just so I could...
To insulate yourself.
Yeah, to somehow, in my own world, probably quite immature, trying to be cooler, but trying to be different, trying to be... Well, you don't understand, or, you know, it's a bit immature because you end up being too lonely sometimes. But
I think identity is really important at that age.
That's
you know,
right.
Building your own identity, and especially, I guess, like you said, if you're into music, you want to like identify yourself with that. And then you get older and it's actually less important.
Yes.
And it's almost about not having less identity, really, because it all is just...
one universe.
What do you mean by that? It's important to have less identity.
Well, I mean, I think that it's certain phases in life. You know, you build an idea about who you are, and then you can either bring that with you your whole life through and be like, this is who I am. But yes. I think a lot of artists, you know, and creative people who try to break through, you know, different phases of their own creativity, you know, mm-hmm. like you want to do something different, and sometimes you got to kind of break through who you think you are.
So you shed the kind of bits and pieces that you've picked up. Yeah. And I think that's true sort of materially as well. As you go through life, you start to realize you want less, you want to hold on to less.
Yeah.
But so music is a big part of kind of, it's a great way to shape a young person's identity, or it's a kind of a mode in which to do that.
Yeah. Anytime I see like teenage, kids with like green hair or punks or whatever, I just feel like so warm in my heart. Like, yes. I just feel so much like love for them.
Yeah.
So you guys were working when you started to have some success. You all had a job, and simultaneously your track Twice was being played on all these TV shows, like 5 TV shows in one time or something.
Oh, wow, yeah.
And you still were feeling, you were in a bubble still, I guess, and not quite sure. So you kept jobs alongside this. How long did that period go on for, when you were kind of unaccepting of being a band, it sounds like?
I mean,
it went on for a little while. I mean, me and Eric were doing backup singing and percussion with Jose Gonzalez, touring around. And I was working at a cafe before that for a little while, and Håkan was driving taxi. And
for a while, I was just really poor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you've described that you might have had some difficulty accepting that you were a band or becoming a band. And what makes a band a band?
Well, it kind of started like it was going to be my project first. Yukimi Nagano's album.
Yeah.
And they were all, you know, in my head, writing music for me. And I was very much me, you know, 20-something, very sort of, I'm a star and nobody knows it.
Fair enough.
Yeah. And then I think that, you know, after a bunch of different roller coaster rides, you know, working with different producers and people, and just coming to a realization that this is all crap. And, you know, what I'm doing, you know, even though these are big famous producers, these friends of mine, you know, are really...
Did you put a record out?
No, I never did.
You never did.
But I wrote a lot of music.
How far did you get into it then?
I was working with some people in Stockholm for like a good 6 months maybe. And yeah, it was a mental, you know, sort of period where, you know, when you don't really know exactly what you want yourself. Classic story. My heart was with the music. I was writing with the guys, and I kept trying to get that into the mix, and they're like, no, you know, we need a song, and you know, we need, you know, this and you need that, and you should collaborate with this writer and that writer, and you know, so I made all the mistakes you could possibly make, and then sort of realized luckily along the way that, you know, my heart was really at the music that we were making, and then we got a deal, and that whole ball started rolling.
You were more comfortable.
Yeah, I was comfortable, and you know, I think also just the fact that we got a record deal was kind of like confirming that, okay, this music is okay, you know, it's not just something that I like, but, you know, because it's so easy to get wrapped up in everybody else's opinions and not really know, you know, lose yourself in that, especially.
I think maybe the way I decide to work with somebody or the way I go forward into the next project is usually just a little sidestep. It's not like a big, and now we must have Timberland and such and such and such and such, you know, that it's usually, there's Matthew Herbert just there, you know, and we understand each other, or there's, I mean, even when I made the record on EMI with a lot of different producers and all that kind of stuff, the kind of way you were working there, that was a collaboration between me and an A&R guy who was already a friend of mine, you know, so I said to him, you know, I've been dropped, will you come and meet me for a pint and tell me what you think I should do with my career? And by the end of that, he wanted to sign me. So it was a sidestep, even though it doesn't look like it from the outside. It looks like one of them big overarching things.
Yeah, yeah,
then the last records I made were with the guy who's been my musical director all these years, even through Moloko times, and did lots of work with Moloko. And it's always like, it's best to stay not creatively in your comfort zone, but to take natural steps, I think.
Definitely.
Is that what you're kind of talking about? That it was a natural. It was. You guys obviously had a connection from the beginning, and and that's beautiful, and that's what creates beauty.
It takes time to build like an honest relationship, and where you also can be a bit vulnerable and fragile and express those things. It's hard to express that when you're in a studio with old sunglasses, megastars.
Yes,
I suppose if you're not. Maybe some can do it. If you really can do that, then of course it's magic. But
would you call yourselves experimental?
I'd like to. Yeah, I don't know if I always am. You know, like sometimes you have ideas in your head, like oh, I'm so weird and experimental, and then you keep writing the same song over and over again. But
I don't know
about sometimes I guess. But you know, it doesn't always. I mean, yeah. But I'd love to think of ourselves as experimental because it's something that I really admire in other artists.
It's fun. Yeah. It's more fun to keep going. But then you end up always just slightly outside of what you thought you could do.
Yeah.
Which is a bit scary. Somebody said to me once, who's a writer, a playwriter, and he said, it's no good unless you're scared. It's no good unless you think it might fail.
Right.
For sure what you're doing is not good if you don't think it's possible to fail.
Yeah, it's so strange, isn't it? Because I feel like it's a real good reminder, that one, because as soon as you go into the studio, I at least, you know, I really feel comforted by the feeling of me knowing what I'm doing and feeling like, okay, you know, valuing it as good in my head or whatever. And then it's like, but you're not necessarily, you know, in that space where you're pushing your boundaries unless you do.
Is that why you've collaborated with people, to push the boundaries?
No.
Honestly, like, we haven't never ever really tried to collaborate with any. It sounds kind of like bragging, but we've always been, like, really fortunate to have people ask us to collaborate.
Yes.
Which has been...
But you worked with outside producers on your own.
Yeah.
So what does that do? Does that take you outside of your comfort zone? Does that sort of, did they push you further in places that you hadn't been before?
I mean, it can also just reaffirm that we are quite okay without anybody.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes we might feel lost and maybe we need somebody with some skills, you know.
And it's often a letdown, that,
yeah,
isn't it?
And then after the whole process of finishing up something with somebody from the outside, you realize that, you know what, we could have done that too.
Do you think to yourself we could have done it better, or
no? But not necessarily better, but
even more.
It wasn't. It's a little bit sometimes, I think. Often the emperor's new clothes, you know, everyone's like, this is going to change something. It's usually people who aren't creative who say, you know, you should definitely, you know, this is going to be a great, you know, and we try to be open, and sometimes it is, and sometimes it's also like, not worse, not better, but what is...
Well, what it brings you is that kind of, you kind of learn something from that person, how they do stuff.
Yeah.
Actually,
that's the view.
It's nice to be in other studios and to see how they set up things and...
What kind of gain structure they have with the gear?
Yeah.
I guess we could do more.
Yeah.
Actually, it's, sometimes it feels like we're in our bubble a little bit too much.
In Maloko, you see, I was in a band with, he was my boyfriend, you know. There was more of a love affair to begin with and just then messing about. And ended up with a record deal. And I always wanted to be a visual artist, so kind of I had approached it from a point, more conceptual point of view, without wanting to be too pretentious, because I didn't think like this at the time, really. But just, you know, we're not going to do that, we're going to do this, and, you know, and we're going to chat, and it's going to be Dolls on Not a Real Band, and, you know, it was all that kind of way of thinking. And over the years, it was me that was pushing to kind of bring in other people. So actually the main person we did bring in was Eddie, who I'd worked with recently on a couple of albums. He was the producer. He did string arrangements and brass arrangements with us and helped with the mixing and stuff like that. And it freshened it up, you know. It was it broadened the palette.
Yeah.
And I always felt that was something that was healthy for us.
Mm. Yeah.
So I guess sometimes you need it. Sometimes you need to
close in and find yourself again.
Find your stuff or be more consistent in what you are. It can be so broad. Maybe if too many people work on something, it gets very... That's the problem within the band as well. It's so democratic. So some songs, they die out from democratic kind of
from kindness.
From yes. kindness.
Yeah.
So we don't know what the song is about.
Trying because. To be fair. Like, yeah, it starts with, you know, maybe, for example, the two people, and then somebody doesn't like that, somebody doesn't like this, and in the end you're just like, I don't know where the song went. You yeah. know, and just
so what do you play anything? Do you play?
No.
So do you write all the lyrics or?
Yeah.
Okay. And the melodies?
Yeah.
Yeah.
When did you discover that you could sing? And it's a very unique voice because it's obviously, there's a bit of Prince there, but then there's a bit of Japanese that sounds to it as well. It's really a great, lovely voice. When did you discover you could sing?
Well, I always liked singing as a kid, but I wasn't, you know, but I remember my uncle sent me a bunch of tapes with like musicals and stuff. Mm-hmm. And he sent me like Madame Butterfly, like the opera on videotape. And I remember being like 8 years old, realizing that I had a vibrato. I was like, oh, my God, I have to call my best friend. Like, listen to my voice. I got a vibrato. I have this vibrato. Like, wow. I can sing opera. And I was so proud and so happy. And then there were, like, these moments. I remember, like, this, like, summer camp thing. And I was in the States at the time. Living with my mom there, and it was summer camp, and you know, we were like science summer camp at school or something, and we were all going to bed, and I was like, we were talking about, well, you know, just kids bragging and stuff, and I was like, well, I like to sing and I can sing, do you guys want me to sing this do you want to hear me sing a song? And they're like, yeah. And I sang this Disney song, like the Aladdin, I Can Show You the World or something like that. And I was super nervous. It was a really big deal for me to, like, show them that I could sing, you know? Like, so I have these moments.
What did they say?
I don't even remember, but I remember that, you know, I wanted to show off, basically. Yeah, yeah. So I have, like, some moments where, you know, I sort of felt like I have the secret. I can sing, but nobody knows, you know?
When did your parents find out you could sing?
I probably like before my teens, because you know, I just had I just memorized songs on the radio and always remembered all the lyrics and stuff. And you know, as parents, they're like, wow, she knows the lyrics to this song.
Yes.
Wow,
yeah. Yeah.
So just enjoyed it, I guess. And yeah. then I think when I was like 13, I had a band with some rock guys called Free Static. Terrible yes. name. Very grungy. No.
And then, cool.
You're yeah, very good static. With the grunge singing also.
Yeah, yeah. And actually, I think I thought of that name.
And where was this? Where were you living at this stage?
In Gothenburg.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I wrote my first song at that time, which is, yeah. And then,
does it still stand up, your first song? How was your first song?
I actually don't remember it, but my sister probably has it because I think I recorded it because she had like a little... Porta Studio. What about you? When did you start?
Because, well, I got really obsessed with music in Manchester, but I didn't think I was going to make music. And I went to see Sonic Youth when I was 14 in Manchester. And the next day I went to the record exchange and I sold all my U2 records to buy some Sonic Youth records. And that was it. And as you say, you know, then I just was like, I'm a weirdo. And that's it. Good. Yeah. People would be like, you're such a weirdo. You're a freak. I'd be like, do you even know what a freak is?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Wow. And you just got some pride in myself.
Yeah.
It really helped me have a bit of confidence to build a life that suited me instead of sort of accepting the one that was being put in front of you. And I think music can be great for that. Mm-hmm. But I didn't start making music until I was 19 when I moved to Manchester and I met Mark. And then, as I said, it wasn't really very serious for a very long time. I was just playing with things.
Right.
I didn't think I was a singer.
But that's kind of what it should be, I think, just playing with things. I think, you know, once it starts becoming something else, you kind of lose yourself a little bit, you know.
Exactly.
I mean, at least I personally feel that, that you know, sometimes when you're too serious or you're trying to, you know, you're trying to write, I don't know, it just, you...
Yeah, you're not writing advertising jingles, you know, you're making art. So yeah. I think there's a big difference in the approach.
Right.
Here I am, Roisin Murphy, and you're listening to The Sync Sessions, brought to you by Heineken, Live Your Music. So, it's a question you've probably been asked millions of times, but they said that they named the band after you because you were like a little dragon. Yukimi's a little dragon. She's a banshee, as we say in Ireland.
Was she
terrifying?
Times.
Was she terrifying even then?
No.
We've had some fights.
But cute.
For sure.
You know, it's like super annoying. Yeah. I'm sure for you when you are really angry and the boy's just like, "Oh, you're cute. You're so angry. You know,
do it
you're
again.
Like a little dragon." That we can put in a, you know, little box and make you rest.
So, do you mind if I ask you about this big boy collaboration? Hot topic.
Listen now.
This is a special section of my podcast. This is a hot topic. So, the emphasis on my question here is it's not just it's absolutely brilliant, really, that you've written this track, you know, that you've been part of the... This Mama Told Me.
Oh, yeah.
With Kelly Rowland is now doing the vocals.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, probably par for the course or whatever. But that's a big one, isn't it? I mean, the geezer from Outkast, come on.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, very cool. Yeah. So did you go together in the studio and do that? Or
Yeah.
Where did you do it?
Well, we were in...
Stankonia Studios.
We were there as the band for a couple of times. And then me and Eric flew out for like a week and... We're out in Atlanta writing with them.
So how much writing did you do? You must have did quite a lot of writing in a week.
Yeah, we also did bowling. So there's
more tracks around or there's kind of potentially...
I think there are some tracks that we actually made that never came out.
That might somehow surface in some way or other.
I don't know.
There was one cool one with J. Paul.
Oh, but that one came out.
Higher Res.
That one's on his album, actually. Yeah.
Is it on the album?
Yeah, it's on his album, I think. Yeah.
I think it's like an side track.
Okay.
But
that's cool.
Yeah.
That was a good track. Yes. I mean, I was inspired by it, but it didn't get any attention. Not that matters.
What do you think was happening there? They were just like making tracks, millions of tracks, and then boiling it down to very few of what was done. Is that the way they were working?
I mean, their studio, that whole Stankonia experience was very different from our own studio. It was a lot of, it was different studios, a lot of people making beats and kind of big boy drifting in and out of different rooms. And we were in one of the rooms, I suppose. And so I think there was so much happening at the same time.
It's like a factory.
Yeah, but a lot of soul in it. It's not, yes. It wasn't dead in that way, but yeah, definitely a factory. It was like they really made the most out of that space.
Yeah.
Sort of.
Interesting.
Yeah, right?
Interesting experience.
Yeah, especially for us who are like still very used to be very secluded from everybody else. And
yeah, it's very like, different to...
If somebody opens the door and goes in behind me, I will feel it instantly. Oh, there's an energy in the room now. I'm not alone. You know, I better watch out what I do.
We're like a sect.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it is
but
different.
But there was just open doors and people like, yeah, man. And, you know, it's like...
Yeah, it was good energy, though.
Yeah, it was really good energy.
I mean, they were all, everyone who came in was, I don't think I ever got a bad vibe from
them.
Yeah, it was almost like they were hype men
around.
They lack the neurosis, don't they, that we have as in Europe. And it's, I mean, Moloko was born in Sheffield, which is the opposite, again, a bit more like probably how you guys are up in Sweden.
Yeah.
You know, it's cold and we huddle and and we certainly don't go, check this track out, man.
Exactly.
It's kind of crazy. Like, we're living, we're VIPs, we're doing it often.
Yeah.
Oh, it was a bit like that when I worked in Miami too, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's interesting, though. It helps peeling away some of that neurosis, no?
Well,
it's good for your creativity.
I think Americans are very good at that.
Yes.
Like, yeah, I think it was some other time. I remember we were invited to... P. Diddy's studio. It was him. He was releasing his Dirty Money record, and it was these two girls there, and then J. Electronica and some of the, and he wasn't there, but they had these big speakers and they were going to play their new music. And those girls, they just like, they were like putting on a show for us.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, every drop, everything. They were dancing, they're singing along, you know, and they like blew us away.
Amazing.
We were just like, oh my God, this is like the most fattest music we've ever heard.
Yeah, it was like,
and then it's
fantasy.
Like, okay, you guys want to play something? You know, we're like, okay. And we sat on the sofa just with our shoulders up, like really uncomfortable, trying to like nod our heads a little bit, you know, like, ooh, embarrassed. And then being like, it doesn't sound as good as theirs. You know, I was definitely not, you know, standing on the sofa dancing, you know. And it was just, yeah, it was, I think, I mean, yeah, it's just funny. And then obviously, you know, you hear the music in another context and it makes you feel different. But there's definitely something to be said about, you know, how you present your
totally
music to people. Yeah,
yeah.
Are you like cranking it up and dancing and be like the way you are when you're alone with it, maybe? Or are you more, you know, or do you let somebody else's energy, you know, absorb you in the room, or do you have to convince them with your energy? Like, okay, not really feeling it right now, but I'm gonna nod my head anyway and be like,
yeah.
It's very interesting, but that definitely opened my eyes. Like, wow,
it's now or never in America, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because they can't go back to nice, comfortable social security or anything like
no
that.
No,
right. They'll either do this or they're gonna work three jobs. You know,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's get this done, and clarity of vision and everything. And I think there's a great deal to be said for it. Honestly.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's not it's very far from the Swedish modesty, put it that
yes,
way.
And
you know,
the Sheffield.
People will be like, hey, I'm an amazing
grump
producer. You should really work with me.
Yes.
Here's my card. I think you'd love my music.
Yeah. No, yeah. This Sheffield's like, it's not going to get anywhere anyway, so it don't matter. Oh, yes. Ooh. So you've picked 10 tracks that we're calling your top 10 tunes of all time. And I know from experience that when you've picked, I picked 10 tracks one day and another set of 10 tracks the next.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
From your favorite tunes of all time. So, Yukimi, you chose Kate Bush, Woman's Work. Do you want to talk about that for me?
Yes. Well, I'm a huge fan. I'm a huge Kate Bush fan. Just generally. So it was obviously her. I mean, that was kind of the first song that just came to mind, but she's written tons of beautiful songs. But it's a song that I kind of don't listen to very often.
Mm-hmm.
And when I do listen to it, I usually feel like I need to listen to it. And it always just makes me cry.
It's beautiful.
And yeah. And when I listen to it, I don't want to like have it in the background. I want to really listen to it because I feel like I need it. And yeah, it's just, it's, I bring it out every now and then, and it's important to me, and it just, it, you know, it just makes me feel this sort of rush of emotions. And I think that she has that, that is just power of a song, really, and it's one of those tracks that's important.
She's a very uncompromising artist.
Yeah.
And has led a very uncompromised life in terms of how she sort of secluded herself. This
right
was a record that came out only a few years ago, isn't it? It was about 8 years ago, this one.
I don't really know, actually.
It was like a return. It was a record out of the blue. And she kind of lives in the countryside, doesn't she? So how do you live generally? Do you live in a city now, or are you in this countryside? Or
I live in the city, not smack in the middle. But yeah, I think I can relate to that idea of kind of being more in the country with more nature and more. But at the moment, I live in the city. And
she's
and
a woman who didn't want to sort of dilly-dally too much with fame. That's how
right
I feel she kind of operated. Uncompromising as a singer and as a songwriter and producer.
Right.
And then
well,
took
her
herself,
music
took
speaks,
herself away
speaks
from sycophants and
right
that sort of thing. Do you feel famous? Are you famous? Do you go walking down the street at home?
No, definitely not. I think like twice or maybe three times in the last 10 years, somebody in Sweden has been like, that I don't know, come up on street like, hey, are you in Lil Dragon? I love your band.
Uh-huh.
So no, that just doesn't happen ever.
Have you felt any kind of effects of fame?
Well, I mean, maybe in the sense of, you know, when you write music, having expectations on yourself. And sometimes having that sort of be a wall that you need to break down because you feel like, you know, it's yeah, going back to what I said about where we started with just aimlessly writing for fun.
Yes.
Not taking it so seriously. I think that sometimes, you know, any certain amount of success can do that to you. You know, there's a backlash where you just all of a sudden feel like You know, I mean, people go around saying, you know, people will tell you that I love, you know, you're amazing or you're this, and then you go to a studio and you don't feel any of that, and it all feels like a fake momentarily, and then, you know, you kind of try to, okay, put all the pieces together and find a way to be creative. So I think that in that sense, sometimes, you know, getting praise is a terrible curse because it can really, like, put you in the wrong headspace.
It's also terribly boring, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, I'm not sure how the people slagging me off. I'm more interested in criticism. My ear just is much more attuned to a harsher kind of voice than just telling me I'm great. I can't.
Well, I mean, yeah, I don't know. I hear what you're saying. I wish I was more like that. But I guess I sometimes also get comfortable sometimes in being comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, you get comfortable in feeling like, oh, I got this, or I'm good at this, or, you know, oh, well, maybe you don't, you know, take it all in, but it feels good to hear that, you know. But sometimes you don't realize the effects of it until afterwards when you're trying to, you know. So I actually, you know, a few things you said today really resonated with me, where it's like, you know, you kind of need to be reminded of that sometimes, like the part about being uncomfortable and how sometimes, you know, if you don't feel fear, mm-hmm. you know, you're not necessarily going to do anything interesting. I think that's an important one.
Yeah, so I'm always on
that. Embrace it, you know, like embrace the whole shit of it all.
It's probably easier to get comfortable because you all know each other so long as well. So, like, say if you were going into a different studio situation every day, then you can't. But knowing each other. So, yeah, it sounds like you guys are taking risks. It sounds like you guys are experimenting, and it's alive and it's awake and it's warm, and that's the most to me it's great. Okay, Eric, push it.
Yeah,
real good. This is my son goes around singing this all the time. And he's six. I mean, it is one of the great melodies.
It was the first single that I think I was six or seven. I was so proud of it that I had that thing, the cover with
Salt and Pepper, push it.
With, like, it was such an extreme image to me, like seeing these two dark skinned, beautiful girls with, like, gold chains and like haircuts and colored hair and the beat being so aggressive. I had never really heard anything like it after that. It's like Casio punk hip hop music.
Yes, yeah.
And the video to it also is extreme. It's so much energy. I can't take it, you know.
It's just still a great groove, isn't it?
I mean,
like, my children, it's funny, children get used to really bad pop really, really quickly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, they hear it even when you try not to let them hear it. They hear it somewhere else and they know every word of these songs you've never heard yourself and you've got.
Yeah.
But that's one that they like just as much as any of the rubbish that's on the radio.
Yeah, I mean,
It's just unstoppable.
I'm going to try that, actually. I mean, I do love that song as well.
It's unstoppable. So. I played them Total Eclipse of the Heart. I tried to think of things from my time that are just, like, unstoppable, you know.
yeah.
But that one works for sure.
Yeah.
So, Håkan, yours is Neville Brothers, A Change Is Gonna Come.
The blues guy.
I'm still hoping for a change. No, it's just blown away the first time I heard it. He sings so beautiful, like an angel.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And it's a deep song as well. A lot of pain in it, but
you've got some deep kind of Nordic sorrow coming off you.
He does, actually. Yeah. He does. Well spotted.
It's true, but
he's probably the most melancholy in the. Eric tries to write sad songs, but he's just too.
Maybe.
That's good to have that tension in the group. No?
Yeah, I guess it's a Swedish thing somehow.
You're a laugh a minute, as we say here.
Folk music is could be very sad. Or,
yes.
Yeah.
Is there a good rich history of folk music there?
Yeah, it is.
And are you into it?
You were kind of born into it.
Yeah, I was born into it, so it's.
How's
I'm not
that?
Into it, like, actively, but.
How were you born into
it? No, my parents, they were active.
They're on the fiddlers. Jumper wearers. They wear like nice woolly jumpers. And...
No. But
No.
Leather chaps. Come on.
Both play the violin. Though,
yeah,
right?
They both play the fiddling about.
Wow. And that's their job. That's their. They did that for a living. Or?
No. My dad's now it's getting really rural. But my dad's a furniture
carpenter.
Wonderful.
Woodworker, and my mom was a music teacher.
But is there any dance music in folk? Because Irish folk music, there's a lot of dance music. I mean, the fiddle and the barrel and all that.
Two sides of the same thing, I guess.
Yeah,
I'll never forget that when we lived together in the whole studio collective. That was this one time that like your friends. You had a party, there was red wine everywhere, and like our rehearsal space was, everyone was like dancing, the folk music.
Yeah.
Yes, well, you can really get a sweat up. You really can.
It was very different from, me and Eric were more into like hip hop and R&B and stuff, and it was a good contrast, you know?
Yeah. No, but it's one of the pieces of my heart, but I can't really do it myself.
Express
because
it.
It's too...
Maybe one day. Maybe one day you'll return somehow to it at your own acute angle.
Yeah.
No,
maybe.
But sometimes it happens that
it comes out.
Yeah. Like live, but that there is very sort of, we're just in the rhythm and it's more of a techno thing. And all of a sudden, this somehow blue melody sounding very Swedish comes.
That's and nobody else would notice except you guys. Probably.
Yeah.
So, well, listen, I have to say this was wonderful speaking to Little Dragon today.
Yes, likewise.
Oh, it was really, really, really nice and a huge pleasure for me. So,
same to us.
Yeah.
Very nice.
How beautiful.
Nice to have genuine conversations, you know.
They're simply lovely. Simply lovely.
Yeah.
To get your hands on tickets to the hottest gigs and festivals, visit heinekenmusic.ie. Heineken, live your music. Enjoy Heineken responsibly. Visit drinkaware.ie.